Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. This is Advent Conspiracy number 3. Today we are going to be talking about giving more. Just a brief recap, although I think, if I remember correctly, y'all have all mostly been here all 3 weeks. We're kind of working our way through this idea of Advent Conspiracy, a program put together by some pastors to try to reclaim the subversive nature of Advent. Week one, we looked at how to worship more fully as families, how to engage worship at home and with our kids outside of the context of church. Week two, last week, we talked about how to spend less, and there were some great creative ideas about how to potentially spend less, at least raw dollars, or perhaps spend less on stuff and maybe spending comparable amounts at Christmas time, but having more of it go to organizations or products that are meaningful or align with our values. This week we're going to talk about give more, and so I want to start by being a little cheesy and watching the end of The Grinch. If you haven't watched it yet this year, you know, here we go. I can't get the sound patch through.
Christmas is coming, they're just winking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two. Then the who's down in Whoville will all cry, boo, boo. That's a noise, grinned the Grinch, that I simply must hear. He paused, and the Grinch put a hand to his ear. And he did hear the sound rising over the snow. He started.
Sounded glad. Every fool down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was without any presence at all. He had stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. He puzzled and buzzed till his puzzle was solved. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
All right. So, I mean, I can't imagine that y'all hadn't seen that before, maybe 23,000 times. But just in the background of our minds as we talk today about what it means to give more. And for the first time, as I was watching this, last night, getting ready for today, I started to wonder. I may have wondered this before, but I don't remember wondering it before. What Christmas would look like if you walked downstairs on Christmas morning and there was actually everything was gone. If there wasn't stuff there, what would we do? How would that completely derail the experience for us as a family? So, hopefully, it's a purely hypothetical exercise, and this, you know, doesn't ever happen to you. But what, just beginning to really wrestle with honestly, no matter how much we together over these several weeks have talked about how much stuff doesn't hold us and how we're trying to push back against the way stuff grasps us at Christmas, but to really wrestle honestly with how much of our experience of Christmas would be deeply, profoundly even affected if we walked into our living rooms and there was nothing there. So hold on to that. And as we talk today, and we're going to once again, you know, hopefully share ideas. I would welcome your ideas as always. This is meant to be a free exchange of good ideas. So a couple of things just to introduce the idea before we kind of turn it up or turn it open. I've mentioned this book to you before briefly. It's called Unplug the Christmas Machine. This is probably one of the more it has informed my whole idea of Advent and Christmas long before before I was married, before I ever had children. Did a all-day workshop with Unplug the Christmas Machine at a church where I was doing an internship during seminary, and it was really profound. And in it, the authors mention this idea based on their own social science. I forget what their backgrounds are, the authors' backgrounds. They work in, one of them works in clinical work. I didn't see the metrics, but this is what they cite as what children want at Christmas. So in their interactions with children, based on anecdotal and then some statistical analysis, what children actually want are according to these two people, Joe Robinson and Jean Capix-Staley, three things: relaxed and loving time with family, an evenly paced holiday season, reliable family traditions. That's what children say they want at Christmas. Relaxed and loving time with family, an evenly paced holiday season, reliable family traditions. I think that sounds pretty accurate for me too. So that might be for children, but like that sounds good to me. I will say this morning in Children's Chapel, because it was my day to be in Children's Chapel. I love Children's Chapel. We were talking about ways that we could help offer joy or share joy with other people. And so Cindy asked the children, what makes you joyful? And all of the children who spoke talked about spending time with you, like spending time with their families. Now, there is a domino effect when you talk to 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds that whatever the first kid says, then all the other kids then say. But this seemed especially sort of resonant with our conversation today, that when talking about what brings you joy, like 6 consecutive kids talked about started with your child, being with our parents. Little James Mazur said, being with my new baby sister. I mean, it was awesome. The three things children want most at Christmas: relaxed and loving time with family, an evenly paced holiday season, and reliable family traditions. So the idea for this third session is giving more, and I want to sort of try to immediately deconstruct what giving more is about, because I think for many of us, it could immediately conjure ideas of you know, giving more in terms of financial, giving more lavishly or expensively. It's funny, and this is a total tangent. The new vision statement that the vestry has been sharing in these listening sessions, one of the 4 new tenets, one of our 4 new pillars as a church is sacrificial stewardship, and people in the listening sessions do not like that because they immediately assume it means we're going to be hitting people up for more money. Like that our new vision, one of our 4 vision tenets is sacrificial stewardship, and people are like, Why is it that they want more money? Why do they want more money? And it's like, that's actually not the totality of what stewardship is. Stewardship is, we're going to talk about environmental stewardship. We're going to talk about being stewards of what we have in our, you know, just like a more expansive, but people immediately assume they're going to hit us up for more money. So with this, giving more isn't necessarily about giving more and having a deeper red bottom line at the end of the Christmas season, but giving more in terms of ourselves. Because for me, the whole conversation is oriented around those three things children actually want. Time with family, an even-paced season, and traditions that they can rely on. So I wonder as we sort of, I'm going to sort of open this up, but you know, for me, this whole Advent conspiracy thing is not just about things we teach at our children. It's not just something that we like, one more thing we're trying to like get them to learn, but like things that we are steeping ourselves in as families, like whole families, not just something we do to our children, but that we participate in fully. So as we're thinking of ways that we could give more, I welcome ideas, all ideas, but especially those ideas that are about how we create new practices and cultures as families to give more. And the Advent Conspiracy folks really orient everything around how God gives himself in the person of Christ, that when God gives the most lavish gift of all time, it was a gift of humble humility. I mean, of humble incarnation. It was a gift of himself. And so perhaps the gift of ourselves is the most precious thing we can give. And so thinking creatively about that. Sometimes that's not something we can give easily to coworkers or to our kids' teachers, but just thinking creatively about this. How do we give more of ourselves, are more generous in our giving without necessarily defaulting to, I think Melinda was last week, you know, talking about going and getting the thing from Old Navy or whatever it is, you know, the tchotchke. So I wonder how you have tried to give and to be, to embody this idea of giving more. I wonder what ideas you have. What did you do? What have you done with your kids to get them out and giving? How have you cultivated giving practices with your children or within your families? I wonder.
Industry.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last week. Yeah. Yikes.
Give less.
I gave a little less.
Yes.
Away.
Yeah.
When I brought everything home, we packaged it as a family, so I gave a little bit of terms. But and you know, they got to see everything that was being given.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, like Bray was so excited because it's the same pants that he wears, and he says those awesome pants. So, I mean, it's just little things like that that I think shows that everyone needs a Christmas.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Did most of you, did many of you participate in the tree thing this year? Nice.
And they came up with like a goal of how much they wanted to raise and sold hot chocolate outside, which resulted in us sitting outside
sure.
4 weekends in a row.
Oh.
That was like a very walking goal. But they took all that money and then bought toys with it for toys and stuff. And somebody was saying last year that it was hard this year with their kids to get them excited about buying gifts and stuff. And I found this year we did the egg tree and didn't do the hot chocolate first. And they're like, they just, I mean, they didn't care at all, but they just weren't as excited.
Yeah.
But when they took their own money, they had $84 last year, and they got to go.
Way to go.
They got a ton.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I can't get that much stuff for $84, but they just had so much more fun taking it out.
Nice.
And they got to pay for
What a great idea.
Yeah.
So to this whole idea of giving yourself, there's something about the way that it required them to give of their own, of themselves more. They had to stand outside to do the hot chocolate thing, which invested them. I think that's great. That makes sense that they would be more like connected to it when you think about it. What other ideas?
That's actually similar. We haven't done it in a few years. The Little Seahouse Stewards, which is connected with First Presbyterian Church downtown, and the Stew Pot, everything they do, where children are interacting with the homeless and giving something, it requires that the family kids have to do some kind of fundraiser. Which at first, when we did it when our kids were younger, I was a little annoyed by that, because it's like, okay, well, we're already, you know, giving our time to do the thing with the homeless people. But it's, as you said, like, it, when the kids give their time first, and they see their, like, they see the relationship to, like, the money.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned it last week, you know, the little girls who do Paper for Water, who launch Paper for Water. One of the things I love about gifts like that is, you know, there's a little tag. So it's a tiny little Christmas tree ornament, but there's a little tag that tells you about Paper for Water and what the proceeds do. So I'm tempted to give just a donation to a charity to someone, I always think of the Seinfeld episode where George, the human fund, where George makes up a charity to give money to his coworkers. It's one of the greatest episodes, the Festivus episode, where he makes up the human fund and gives imaginary donations to that. And Melody is, by and large, pretty resistant to the idea of giving charitably, like, if you're going to, in her mind, it's like, if you're going to give charity to charity, give to charity, but don't call it a gift to someone else. So, and I always think about the human fund. What I love about Paper for Water is it is functionally, it's a charitable donation. I mean, the ornament costs like, you know, 23 cents. They sell it to me for $12. Essentially, all of that is going to drill a well somewhere. I mean, like, I'm making a donation. So I love that, though, because then with the little tag on it, the giving more, it's not just the thing, but it connects both my heart and the recipient's heart with something bigger. There's a value there for both of us that we can feel connected to. I love finding things like that. It's harder to give things like that to kids, although not impossible. Not at all impossible.
My mom's passion project is the Heifer Project, mm-hmm. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And so she makes a donation in my kids' names each year, or had for several years, and she made them scrapbooks, so to kind of give them something tangible. Each year they get a goat or a cow or whatever they get, she'll cut out the, you know, the promotional materials for it and put a page in the scrapbook, so they get
nice.
A book, and then they can share it together and read it.
Yep.
My kids are probably like, where's our Barbie? But
yeah.
It's still.
When we have given to our nephews and niece, when they were younger now, donations to Heifer, we gave them, like when they were real little, we gave them like a stuffed goat to go with the goat, real goat. Or we gave them, because Heifer Project has a great picture book, storybook, and so we gave them the book or thing, you know, something to connect it physically. But yeah, love that.
I started buying a lot from Thistle Farms.
Yeah.
So like the candles, they have tea towels this year. Like a lot of people are getting tea towels this year from me. But, you know, it's like, you know, when, unfortunately, there are people that are just hard to buy for,
mm-hmm.
but I'm like, you know, these are really nice things, and I feel like it's a little bit more than just going and buying a candle.
Yeah.
It's actually, you know, made with love.
It aligns with your values.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully they get something from it, and not only that I'm, you know, passionate about that, but also they're learning something
mm-hmm.
else. And, you know, hopefully spreading the word.
Mm-hmm. We've started, Melody likes to quilt and use a sewing machine, so often she will try to make things that she can use that because she enjoys that. So last year she made sachets, little beautiful sachets, and we ordered lavender and we stuffed them. God, I was stuffing sachets last year for ages. But she was really doing all the work, because then she had to like stitch up the... and they were cute, and we gave them to teachers and to a bunch of people, all the staff. This year she's making napkins for my mom. So, like, really lovely, because she can do that, because it's a gift of her own time. Not everybody loves to craft or to do things like that. So finding organizations that align where you can feel that same sense of the personal, that it came really authentically from you, you know. So any other organizations, share and share alike. The thing I handed out comes from Unplug the Christmas Machine, and it's at the back of the book. They have this list of gift ideas, which I thought was really kind of nice. And their vision is more experiential, giving gifts that are experiential. So giving a gift and then also offering, you know, to participate in that thing. So giving games. They are aligned with the sort of the simplicity movement. Now, keep in mind, this book came out... When is the first print of this? I think the first print of this came out in the 80s. This is copyright 1991. So we're talking about a previous, like, complete previous generation of people. And yet I think that if you sort of can think expansively about this list and think what or could this look like, or there's just timeless stuff on there to jog ideas for children. So I share that with you. I wonder what ways, when you've experimented with giving some sort of gift or experience that you participated in. So perhaps it could be something like giving, like last year I gave tickets to my dad. For Christmas, I gave him tickets to the Colonial, and so he and I went to the Colonial together, golf tournament. I wonder what other things you've done where you've given an experience, and perhaps part of the experience was, I did sort of give half of that gift to myself, because I did get to go. Yeah, I was like, so one of these tickets, Dad, yeah, that's for me. So... But I wonder, when you've given things like that, experiential things, maybe some ideas that you could share with others. And for children, not just for, that was a gift to my dad, but for children as well. I remember somebody talked about Nutcracker or, yeah.
We've done the overnight at the Perot for the kids. And there's a company called Big Frog that'll do custom print jobs, like one-off t-shirts. My kids will wear any t-shirt, matter where they get it from. So that's what they opened on Christmas morning, was like something that basically said, this kid's going to spend the night at the Perot. So they got that because the overnight was, I think, January 2nd or 3rd, so it was a little bit of a delayed gratification. Huh. It was all the family that went, and it's really cool to go because the Perot is completely, it's like 100 people, and you get the whole thing, like, for 4 hours. And you sleep under the dinosaurs, which is definitely another gift to mom and dad, because that is really hard for.
It sounds like an
iParent
field trip.
Yes. The kids had a great time. Just really good bedding, like really good bedding. And so we did that, and I'm kind of playing with the idea for my kids' teachers. I haven't sort of thought this completely through yet. But you know, we sort of do like a small gift card at Christmas, and then we do a small gift card a couple other times throughout the year, and it happens this year that Nathaniel's piano teacher is his third grade teacher, and so we talk to her outside of school every week. She comes to our house every week, and she, you know, loves the symphony, and she's not season ticket holders, and we're season ticket holders at the symphony, and so we periodically get those sort of last minute, like, oh, you can get an extra ticket to go see this at the symphony. And so I'm thinking of offering her, like, hey, let us know if any of these work for you, and we'll give her season tickets, which is also like a charity, because the symphony does a lot of work outside of actually producing the symphony. And that takes care of the one teacher, but I haven't figured out how to replicate that with the other teacher that we don't have that connection with. But yeah, I'm kind of big on those experiences, and I'm looking at Groupon, because you can get the, like, off-room experiences, and I thought that might sound.
a locked a locked room?
Yeah, like you get a, like it's a puzzle room. And you get locked in a room.
Yep.
Where you have to solve your way out. You have to get
then you wake up and yeah.
There's one of the zombies.
You get to pick a theme, like it's a western, or it's like you're in a morgue, or you're in like an old century sort of thing.
Wow.
You have to figure out how to get out. There's a panic button if you can. And it's timed, so you have to do like teamwork to figure out how to
cool.
get out. And if you do, you get like
yeah.
I don't know what. If you don't, they just open the door. But you can get them
nice.
I can give that.
There's a great Mr. Limoncello. Do you ever read that book? Your kids read the Limoncello book. It's a library. Kids get like essentially locked in. Like it's like a, I don't know, like a Willy Wonka kind of a situation of a kind of a fun house. It's a library that has all these, and the kids are locked in, and they have to figure out how to get out. It's a fun book for pre-adolescents.
We're actually thinking about doing it for Mom's Night Out.
The organizers of Advent Conspiracy created a Pinterest board. And this morning, Aaron, because I posted it on the Facebook page, the iParent Facebook page, and Aaron was like, way to go, I didn't know you were on Pinterest. I'm like, wait, I didn't create that. Are you kidding me? I just clicked the hyperlink. So I thought that was, I was really flattered. And I was like, you don't know me at all. So they have a whole board full of ideas on Pinterest for Give More. And, you know, these are the ultimate DIY ideas for experiences, or you know, make it yourself. It's just, you know, super Pinteresty. I'm trying to remember. Wine to Water. Yeah, that's it. There's an organization called Wine to Water. Again, not necessarily for children, but. Sort of the same idea as Paper for Water. And it's the reverse of the biblical story, clearly. Instead of Jesus turning water into wine, they do events and to take wine and convert the proceeds from their work, from their nonprofit, into drilling wells. And you can have parties. And you can, I don't know that you can order their wine, but essentially I think you can do parties. So it's, again, a pretty fun experience to give. With the ultimate outcome being you're drilling wells, you're creating more clean water access points in the world. I wonder what other ideas you have. What?
Started it, and that's where it ended, was to scan in his photo albums so that to digitalize
them. Yep. Cool. And maybe the kids are old enough that they can help with the follow through, and
I can give that again this year. But to make a digital copy, so that you can help.
That's cool. Gosh, that's a labor of love.
One thing we've been doing last week, so my kids have. A 10-year-old and a 6-year-old cousin here in town, and rather than buying them a toy for Christmas, now every year we've tried to give them an experience with our kids together. And so this year, Jess and I were actually at a charity auction a couple weeks ago and bought, I think it was 6 tickets to the local Charlie Brown Christmas production.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the gift to them, was to the cousins, was they can go see a Charlie Brown Christmas with our kids. We, you know, we take them there. So.
Will you be there on Saturday? We will be there on Saturday. But I mean, just to say, that's great. When we're doing the same thing with family.
Mm-hmm. I'll brag on Rolo. He really likes genealogy, and his family's from Chile. For those of you who don't know, so we can't really search for his genealogy roots on
Ancestry.com, but my family has probably been in the country for, I don't know how many hundreds of years. I researched my whole family going back from my dad and from my mom, and has gone to, like, different sites where, you know, family members are buried in Texas and stuff.
Cool.
I put together a book for my mom and my dad. And it's especially meaningful when my grandmother, who just turned 101, looks at it with, you know, Rilla showing her and it showing her, you know, her ancestors where they're buried. And then she shares stories with us, and it triggers her memories. And, you know, that's created some neat moments for our family. So
that's awesome. Those are always...
Ancestry.com, it's so easy. They have so many records and so many... You know.
These kinds of ideas are the largest investment of our time, but when you think year over year, like looking back at the gifts that you remember giving or receiving, those are the gifts you remember giving and receiving, because they took so much more of you to, like, complete. I can never remember. I'm like, what did I give so-and-so last year? And I can never remember unless I did something that really took a lot of my time, and then I remember it.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, it's such a great gift for our kids, too, to have
that. Absolutely.
And on that same note, I got one of those books. If y'all have never seen those books that go with your personal history, you buy them, maybe a hardbound copy, and it talks about all the questions you can ask your parents or your grandparents, and things you would never think of, like, what was your childhood home like? You know, what did it look like? What kind of animals did you have? And I sat down with my grandma and did it, and now my other grandmother, and it's so invaluable.
Cool.
To have that history.
That's really cool.
I got my dad a digital recorder. I should have found out with him. This is
follow
through stuff, too.
Well, mine's
I gave him a book with a list of questions and a digital recorder.
That's awesome.
To sit down
and record. Nice.
So cool.
It's like, what's that, the NPR thing? Or not,
yeah,
NPR.
StoryCorps.
Story.
Yeah.
It's like personalized StoryCorps.
Wow. Mine was my first grandma stopped when my dad was born. I didn't keep going. So, yeah.
Wow.
My mother's birthday is in December, so every year I offer to take her and Maisie to lunch at one of my mom's favorite restaurants, which is kind of fancy, but I make Maisie get dressed up, and we go and, like, you know, act civilized for an afternoon, you know, try to talk about, you know, things that you should talk about at a nice restaurant, you know, so it's an experience for my mom, but it's also an experience for my daughter.
Sure.
And, we're going over Christmas break, and Maisie has asked me every single day. Mm-hmm. She's like, when are we going to go do that lunch? And so I'm like...
Because the three things kids want
right.
Are those kinds of things.
Right, and my mom loves it, and it's not hard. It is just the time. But
yeah.
I love the fact that it's become really meaningful for my daughter.
That's awesome.
One of our main gifts to our kids every year is we do week before Christmas, we have dinner at the restaurant at the tourist from North Park, and then go to the trains in North Park. Yeah, so that's sort of our ritual gift to the kids every year. They've been asking more about when do we go get to see the trains than, you know, what are we getting on their trees. So.
Absolutely.
They remember it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Kids can remember years and years of things that I don't remember, but you know, have those memories.
I really think that they're...
Who hasn't ever been to the trains down there? They're set up there.
It's really cool.
We need to do that. I don't know when we can do that. Experiential. Mm-hmm. Experiential, and turning those kinds of things into an annual tradition in which you're building memories. They look forward to those as much or more than anything else. Spacing those things out, I'm challenged by this second one on their list. Relaxed and loving time with family, or... you know, the relaxed part. But an evenly paced holiday season, sometimes it feels like there'll be like bursts and then a couple, and then a week or two and then a burst. And so trying to figure out how to sort of make it feel like it flows more evenly, that's a challenge. But then fitting something like that experience in the midst of that would really work. Really, really work.
100 miles an hour the whole time, that's even.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That disqualifies as even. Yeah.
Yeah. The adults on my side of the family, usually the day after or like the 27th, our Christmas present to my mother has started to be, we take her out to Fort Worth, which is, my brother lives in Fort Worth, 4-day weekend. If you haven't gone, it's an improv from comedy group in downtown Fort Worth. You go treat her to a nice dinner and the show.
Great.
We've done that like four or past 4 years.
And the cousins get to.
And then
hang out
all
together.
The cousins are together for anything.
They're not us, but.
Yeah, the babies.
Even better.
Even better.
Well, to that point, years earlier about the experience you created with your dad, I think. I don't know about y'all, but since having kids, I've noticed, like, my relationship with my parents, you know, we're so consumed with trying to find time with our children and create these purposeful family magical moments, but I don't spend the time with my mom that I did before kids, like going to the movies or going shopping, and so I'm trying to do things like go see a musical or go to an opera or something. Also, I'm like, oh, I'd love to do that someday.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get more intentional about that, so I
create absolutely
those moments with my mom or with my dad, too. Because I'd have to go hunting with my dad, which
he would remember it.
Yeah. But I love that idea of making it a part of, yeah. Making that a part of your holiday traditions as well as those kids.
I wonder what it would be like. Remembering the success of that colonial gift and how much that meant to him and how successful of a day that was. We need to make that like a tradition. And I need to create something equal and corresponding with my mother. And, like, that's just simple. You know, you don't have the thing to look at under the tree, but you have something to look forward to. And then something really meaningful to remember. So, harder if your family lives, you know, in a different country. But something to anticipate and experience, a meaningful experience. You know, you nailed that, though. It's funny how many of those things we create and try to imagine how we and the children and everybody's going to be able to do something at the same time. But lost in that is, as we have these new developing relationships with our aging parents, like, what are we going to do just us and them? And that's really precious, and we need to hold on to our creativity for that, too. Wonder what other ideas you have.
Yeah, we've just made it a point to be here on Christmas Eve. That's become a tradition for us. You know, there have been times when all four of us were serving in some capacity on Christmas Eve, but it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad that you just said it's fantastic instead of, why did they assign all of us on the same night?
And the last couple of years, some dear friends have invited us to be part of their tradition and go out to dinner after Christmas Eve.
Service. Awesome.
So
yeah, that's what our kids are talking about.
Yeah.
Can't wait to go out.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
But they're a party.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So next week we will talk about love all. And sort of what does that look like? How the core of love permeates everything that we're about this time of year. You know, we've reflected on ways that we can worship and incorporate worship. I wonder how that's going, by the way. Any of you adopt a new practice as a family this year? Have you been able to hold on to it through these first several weeks? I don't see too many nodding heads, but I don't see any outright shaking of heads.
We're still sticking with the Advent calendar.
Yeah.
The liturgy that you provided.
Okay. The sitting here is a little map calendar, Advent conspiracy calendar. Take these if you'd like it. It's a simple activity for every day. You can take or leave every day. You can come back to it. You can be like, okay, finally, you know, 4 days will pass. You didn't have time to do anything, and then there might be something that pops up. So feel free to take that. I'm hoping that the worshipfully thing you're cultivating maybe a new practice that you can continue to develop. But the idea of love, and not just love as in the sort of card-like sentiment of saccharine sweetness, but a sort of meaningful and sacrificial and real life, a real world form of love can permeate everything we do. So next week I want to maybe, and I have just a few ideas that I'll start with, but be thinking about how you try to experience and create love this time of year and at Christmas. How you give and receive it, and how that is central and core to what you and your family do. So the Lord be with you. Let us pray.
Press play.
Let us press play. God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this season of Advent. We thank you for our families. We thank you for each new opportunity, each new day that we have to be with them, to love them, to care for them, to serve them. Fill our hearts with gratitude. Stir up in us new depths of generosity. Help us to give more, and not just from our bank accounts, but more of ourselves. Help us to figure out ways that we can offer more of ourselves, the things about us that make us unique individuals. Help us to figure out ways to give more of that away. Inspire us, draw us closer to you, fill our hearts with love. We pray all this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.